Reveal is brought to you by Progressive, one of the country's leading providers of auto insurance. With Progressive's Name Your Price tool, you say what kind of coverage you're looking for and how much you want to pay. And Progressive will help you find options that fit within your budget. Use the Name Your Price tool and start an online quote today at progressive.com. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. President Biden recently asked Kamala Harris to take on a new assignment.
Madam Vice President, thank you. I gave you a tough job and you're smiling, but there's no one better capable of trying to organize it.
The U.S.-Mexico border.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and for having the confidence in me. And there's no question that this is a challenging situation. As the president has said, there are many factors that lead president to leave these countries.
Biden promised a more humane immigration policy, but his administration has struggled to handle the hundreds of Central Americans who come to the U.S. every day seeking asylum.
The Customs and Border Protection Facility in Donna, Texas, I was there, is at 1,556% capacity right now. There are kids that are sleeping on floors. Some of these children have not seen the sun in days. Is what's happening inside acceptable to you?
That's a serious question, right? Is it acceptable to me? Come on. That's why we're going to be moving 1,000 of those kids out quickly. That's why I got Fort Bliss opened up. That's why I've been working.
Even though the pandemic has closed the border for over a year and almost all asylum seekers are expelled immediately, the U.S. government still faces the arrival of roughly 500 unaccompanied minors a day. Almost half of the migrants are coming from Guatemala.
Must address the root causes that that cause people to make the trek, as the president has described, to come here.
Root causes like violence and poverty, plus a pandemic and two hurricanes this past year. Today on Reveal, we traveled to Guatemala to revisit a story we originally aired in September to try and understand what leads Guatemalans to risk everything to come to the U.S. We begin in a remote mountain village. It's recess outside a tiny five-room schoolhouse. On this late summer day back in 2018, children play in the dirt and grass outside the blue stucco building. Some are dressed in sweatshirts, others wearing indigenous clothing, red and white shirts with embroidered collars. Veteran reporter Maria Martin is here.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Father.
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 Mother.
Everywhere you look in this village, you see American flags painted on the sides of houses and flying in front of cinder block homes. Those houses are built with money sent home from abroad. This has been going on for generations. How many of you have family in the U.S., Maria asks.
Uno, dos,
si.
Tres, cuatro.
Hands spring up.
Cinco, seis, muchos, no?
I asked them if they also wanted to go north to the U.S.
¿Algunos de ustedes piensan en ir en Estados Unidos?
Yo, sí, yo.
Sí, queremos, yo, sí, queremos.
Most of them said yes, and I was struck by the reasons for wanting to go.
¿Por qué?
It wasn't to live a better life or to eat McDonald's or find the American dream.
Ay, 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 este, deuda que no han pagado mis padres, deuda.
Para pagar las deudas.
It was, they said, to pay their family's debts.
Debt. These 8-year-olds are worried about their family's debt. It's a story Maria heard often in her reporting in Guatemala.
This small village in the municipality of Todos Santos, Huehuetenango, is really poor. In this mostly indigenous province, the poverty rate is over 70%. People here have no opportunity to get ahead unless they have relatives in the States who can send them money. And because of this dire situation, migration has become almost a tradition, a rite of passage.
Maria has been coming to these communities for decades, living in Guatemala for more than 15 years.
I've always felt called to cover Central America because it seems that Except when there are wars or earthquakes, there's little interest in Guatemala or the Central American region. But when Trump was elected, I knew that migration would become a big political story and that despite his hardline immigration policies, people would continue to come north. And I wanted to know how that would play out in a place like this community of Todos Santos. That's where I met Zoila Calmo. She's a round-faced Maya woman who looks a little beaten down by life, and understandably so. I've followed her family for the past 2 years. I've traveled to her village where she lives in a small house made of wood, metal sheeting, and dirt floors. It sits on top of a hillside with no road access and no running water. Her husband, Gilberto, who's here too, makes $6 a day when he can get work. But the work is sporadic. She feels completely abandoned by the government. Even now, the only future that Zoila and her family see is in the U.S. Zoila speaks in the Maya Mam language through a translator. She tells me about a dark day back in 2018. Her husband, Gilberto, had left the village to journey north to the U.S. He took their 8-year-old son, Franklin, just as Trump's family separation policy was at its peak. She tells me that when they got to the U.S., she found out that Franklin had been separated from his father. And for months, they had no idea what happened to him.
So, Maria, when we hear about these people fleeing to the U.S., the question that often gets asked is why? Why do they leave their countries, and why should it be the responsibility of the U.S. to take them in?
Well, the answer to that question is rooted in a history that goes back to the 1950s. In 1954, the CIA, under President Eisenhower, ousted Guatemala's first democratically elected president.
Atención, Guatemala. Atención, guatemaltecos. Esta es la emisora clandestina del Movimiento Libertador Guatemalteco desde algún lugar secreto de la República.
This was during the Cold War. The U.S. claimed that supporting military dictatorships prevented the spread of communism. These were regimes that the U.S. government helped put in power and funded with taxpayer money, and that committed massacres and genocide and were responsible for the disappearance of an entire generation of Guatemalans, over 200,000 people, according to the U.N., the majority indigenous Maya. It wasn't until 1999, after Guatemala was at peace, that President Bill Clinton traveled to the country and apologized.
I will reaffirm America's commitment to shed light on the dark events of the past so that they are never repeated.
The U.S. had apologized, but the legacy of those violent conflicts remained. In the wake of those wars, corrupt politicians, not too different from military dictators, took power. They perpetuated a system where a handful of elites got much richer and everyday Guatemalans were stuck in a cycle of poverty.
There was a moment in Guatemala when people experienced real hope and saw possibility for change.
That's right. It was a moment when the United Nations, the U.S., and Guatemala all came together in an effort to root out corruption and establish the rule of law in the country. They promised that everyone, no matter how rich or powerful, would face justice so that eventually people could live securely in a society where they could support their families. This effort was really unprecedented, but that dream was short-lived.
How that dream fell apart and who's responsible? That's what today's show is about. Before our story aired this past September, reveals Aniancy Diaz-Cortez spent more than a year working with Maria to connect those dots. A story that shows how families like Zoila's intersect with some of the world's most powerful players. It all revolves around an alleged quid pro quo between former President Trump and the president of Guatemala. And who else is involved? Vladimir Putin and our newly elected president, Joe Biden. Ana Yancey begins a story in South America.
Right before lockdown began in March of last year, I flew to Bogota, Colombia, to meet the man they call the Robert Mueller of Latin America. His name is Ivan Velasquez, and he brought down some of the most powerful people in Guatemala. And I'm here to talk to him about it. We meet at a Best Western in the heart of one of the fanciest neighborhoods in the city. When he steps out of his taxi, he stands out. Sunglasses, a pressed shirt, good taste in shoes. We go up the elevator and settle down for a long conversation. So let me back up a little bit. In 2013, Velasquez was put in charge of this special United Nations body called the International Commission Against Impunity, better known by its Spanish acronym, CICIG. The UN and the Guatemalan government, with backing from the US, set up the commission to root out corruption in Guatemala. This was after decades of civil war and military rule there. As head of the CICIG, Velasquez could investigate anyone, even the president. I ask him if he had any idea what he was getting into when he took this job.
En realidad, yo no sabía la situación tan compleja que me esperaba.
He tells me he had no idea how complex the situation would be, even though he'd done similar work in Colombia, where he'd investigated 139 members of Congress and brought down the president for his links to paramilitary groups. So when the UN asked him to head the CICIG, he thought
puede ser una experiencia interesante.
It could be an interesting experience.
Y efectivamente fue una experiencia muy interesante.
And he says without a doubt, it was a very interesting experience. Not long after Velasquez started in 2014, Guatemala was at the center of an international migration crisis. 50,000 unaccompanied children arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, and most of them came from Central America. So President Obama dispatched Joe Biden to Guatemala City, where Biden announced the U.S. was throwing a ton of money at CICIG. It was something he talked about that whole summer.
Here's the deal. There's a lot more we can and should do in the United States to deal with the root causes of this problem.
Root causes, like Vice President Kamala Harris mentioned last month. The Obama administration believed that CICIG could help prevent those by going after corruption. Velasquez's big target went all the way to the top. He authorized wiretaps that led to bribery and fraud charges against then-President Otto Pérez Molina, who's still in prison today. With Pérez Molina behind bars, Guatemala had to hold new elections. Enter political newcomer Jimmy Morales. Morales was best known for this weekly comedy show. It's so crass. In almost every episode, he appears as a clown, but in blackface. And the show opens with Morales on a flying carpet. In the space of 1 minute, he makes fun of black people, blind people. He makes a crude joke about the female anatomy. This direct, bigoted appeal, it's what helped get him elected.
The
business elite in Guatemala created Jimmy Morales. They paid for him to play the part.
Morales is a lot like Donald Trump. They're both very famous right-wing populists with no experience in government. Like Trump, Morales promised to drain the swamp. In fact, his campaign slogan was, ni corrupto ni ladrón, neither corrupt nor a thief.
Yo también confié.
I also believed that he could have good intentions, but
pero fui también engañado.
I too was fooled.
When Morales takes office, he has the support of the United States. At his inauguration in 2016, Vice President Joe Biden flies to Guatemala, again. Biden walks down the stairs of Air Force Two, whips off his sunglasses, and waves to the crowd. President Morales is there, waiting to greet him on the tarmac. Later, the two world leaders meet at the Intercontinental Hotel.
I spend so much time.
The audio is a little hard to hear, but Biden is joking that he spends so much time in Central America, maybe he should run for office in Guatemala. Biden and Morales sit in heavy armchairs, a few feet apart, talking as the press cameras flash.
I want to compliment you.
Biden doesn't just congratulate Morales. He announces $750 million in USAID to Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras.
We are all in.
That money would go to the military, to economic development, and to CICIG to fight corruption. Just a week before Obama and Biden left office, Velasquez is photographed holding an oversized check from the U.S. Embassy for $7.5 million.
When you can investigate, justice becomes achievable. Citizens develop a civil conscience. They become aware of and respect the law.
Y también de temor en todos estos corruptos.
Sitting fear amongst the corrupt.
It was a dream team. Velasquez's UN office, President Jimmy Morales, and the Guatemalan Supreme Court pulling together with U.S. backing. Velasquez told me that for the first time, Guatemalan people were seeing the powerful being held accountable. And then...
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully...
Donald Trump takes office. By then, things had begun to unravel between Velasquez and Morales. It starts with breakfast. 500 breakfast, actually. Velasquez was investigating a case of fraud. Someone had charged the government $11,000 for breakfast that were never served. So Velasquez reaches out to Morales.
And I told the president, did you hear about this investigation? Your son's name appeared and it seems he has participated in fraud.
Debería presentarse su hijo.
I think your son should go before a judge.
Several members of Morales' family were implicated. It wasn't a lot of money, but Velasquez says that's not the point.
Hemos visto, hemos conocido siempre en el país.
What we have known and seen always in this country is that justice does not reach the powerful. And our stance was serious.
Nadie está por encima.
Nobody is above the law.
Velasquez urges Morales to go on national television and condemn corruption in his own family. And Morales does.
Mi esposa y yo respaldamos plenamente a nuestro hijo.
With his wife by his side, Morales tells the country that they support their family and that he also believes justice should run its course.
Respetamos a las instituciones responsables de impartir justicia en nuestro país.
But that speech, it's not enough for Velasquez. He wants the president's family members to stand before a judge. And the breakfast, well, they were part of a much larger investigation. In fact, Velasquez was looking to impeach Morales for campaign finance violations. Morales was not okay with that.
Pueblo de Guatemala, como ya lo he manifestado en mi mensaje.
So Morales posts a video on Twitter that ends up on national television where he denounces Velasquez.
He declares me persona non grata. Oh, and he also demands that I leave Guatemala, effective immediately.
But Velasquez refuses to leave the country and won't disband CICIG.
I think that in this situation,
se cayeron las máscaras.
The masks came off.
Que ya la gente era como era.
Everyone was who they really were.
The people of Guatemala take to the streets to support Velasquez. But then the Guatemalan Congress gets involved. Lawmakers declare Morales immune from prosecution. CICIG is allowed to keep going with its other anti-corruption work, but Morales is off limits. So Morales and Velasquez, they're kind of at a stalemate. But there's another campaign happening outside of Guatemala, one that will eventually bring down Velasquez.
Thank you.
After the break, Anyansi takes us 3,000 miles from Guatemala to a coffee shop in San Francisco. There, she meets a foreign agent who wants to topple Velazquez.
We wanted the CICIG out.
And we head back to the hills of rural Guatemala, where families like Soilas still dream of a better life in the States. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Support for this podcast comes from USC. Discover where today's leadership innovations meet tomorrow's critical business challenges. USC Marshall School of Business Executive Education is where business professionals go for lifelong learning and career transformation. In our short course, Psychological Safety, you'll learn how this key differentiator will increase a climate of openness, creativity, and risk-taking to maximize individual and team performance. Explore unlocking your team's full capabilities, psychological safety, and other timely leadership programs at uscexecutiveeducation.com. That's uscexecutiveeducation.com.
Hey, 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 this is Al, and I don't know if you know it or not, but Reveal is a nonprofit news organization. And that means we rely on support from listeners like you. Become a member by texting the word REVEAL to 474747. Standard data rates apply, and you can text STOP at any time. Again, text REVEAL to 474747. Thanks for supporting the show. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is REVEAL. I'm Al Letson. This week, we're bringing you a story that aired last September. It's about Guatemala and how what happens there is connected to decisions made here in the U.S. We left off with crusading prosecutor Iván Velázquez standing his ground, refusing to leave Guatemala despite pressure from the president, former TV comedian Jimmy Morales. Reveal's Anyansi Diaz-Cortez picks up the story from here, tracking down one of Velazquez's most relentless opponents in the unlikeliest of places.
We're in a coffee shop in San Francisco to meet a man who's part of this campaign to bring down Velazquez. It's just a few days before the pandemic closes everything and the place is crowded. Since we're in the Bay Area, we start...
These are California sun cakes.
With vegan cookies.
Have a bite. See if you like it.
I hope you do.
This is David Landau. And before we get to those cookies, let me tell you how we ended up here. While we were reporting the story, we kept hearing about this international lobbying organization called the Association for the Rule of Law in Central America. We have no idea who's behind this group. We have just one clue. This document we uncovered, filed under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Scribbled at the bottom is the name of the American representative, David Landau. And this is where the world gets smaller. It turns out that my editor on this story, Aaron Glantz, he knows David.
Yeah, you showed me this document and I saw his name and I was like, David Landau? With an address on the west side of San Francisco? I know David Landau. I worked with him at a radio station 20 years ago.
So Aaron arranges for us to meet David in this coffee shop.
I decided to make it easy for you because I know you. I've known Aaron for a long time.
David's an independently wealthy white guy. He dresses like a beatnik and still takes pride in being the editor of the Harvard Crimson back in the early 1970s. He doesn't seem to have to do anything for money, so he spends his time on his hobby, writing about Latin America.
So we ask him what his role is in this Guatemalan lobbying group.
I agreed to become, you know, the American whatever it was. Am I a director? Am I the president? I don't even remember what I am.
Actually, he's listed as the director on the document we mentioned.
We wanted the CICIG out. The activity was an effort at political persuasion between the government of Guatemala and find a way of reaching the president.
In other words, they wanted to get Donald Trump to end CSIC. As for who his associates are, that was tougher to get out of him.
Who are you helping?
Who are the people?
Yeah.
I was helping the... I am helping... the funders of this activity and then the people who are carrying it out. But it wouldn't really be responsible for me to say who they were.
So he's not going to tell us who's providing the money. And he doesn't have to. Because in America, if you're lobbying on behalf of a foreign interest, you have to tell the government that you're doing it. But you don't have to say where the money is coming from.
Can I just say this? The unfavorable way to look at this is money laundering, right? Because there are actors who are hiring a lobbyist, and you are not those actors, but you are putting your name, and it obscures the actual actors from the public view.
No, it doesn't. I mean, the fact is that... I happen to be the one with an American address. It's post office box, whatever it was.
I don't understand why David, an independently wealthy gringo, is so invested in Guatemala. And what's more, where does this grudge against CSIC come from? We spent 2 hours talking to David, and he weaves this complicated story, which essentially boils down to this.
Oh, they're Marxists. Velázquez and his gang.
Even now, in the 21st century, David still sees communists everywhere. It goes back to this old idea that by going after the rich and powerful in Guatemala, CSIC is following a Marxist agenda to redistribute the wealth. You sometimes hear the same sort of thing from conservative politicians in the U.S. who consider tax reform that helps the poor socialism. But David claims that's not it. He says Velázquez is a Marxist because he acts like a dictator. He even lumps Velázquez in with what he calls the children of Fidel Castro. David says CSIC showed its true colors in 2018.
CSIC began to work with the Russians. It began to work with Putin. And
you're saying this with a straight face. You realize how crazy this sounds to a U.S. audience?
Yeah, but this was proven. This was demonstrated.
I should say, there's no evidence that Velázquez worked with Putin or ever took money from him. And Putin isn't even a Marxist.
A family called the Bitkovs, who had fled from the USSR. It's me in the 20th century. Russia, okay? They fled from Russia, and the CSIC took on the case of the Bitkov family.
The Bitkovs are a family of Russian millionaires. Putin went after them for embezzlement, so they fled to Guatemala and bought fake passports to get Guatemalan citizenship. Velázquez had charges brought against them, and the Bitkovs were thrown in prison. This is where David is trying to draw that Putin-Velázquez connection. It all sounds like a fringy conspiracy theory, but David's ideas soon make their way into the mainstream. First, the Wall Street Journal publishes a series of columns supporting the Bitkovs. And before you know it...
That is why we're having this hearing.
Lawmakers are talking about it in the halls of Congress. In April 2018, Republican Congressman Chris Smith questioned why Velázquez prosecuted the Bitkovs.
These sentences were far harsher than those given to Guatemalan officials who perpetrated the sale of passports. They are harsher than sentences given to rapists and to murderers.
Lawmakers also suggested Velázquez was working with Putin. This is the same thing David Landau told us. Velázquez turned down an invitation to testify at this hearing. When we were in Colombia, we asked him if he had any connections to Russia.
Are you a Russian agent? ¿Usted es agente de Vladimir Putin?
Ni siquiera conozco Rusia.
He tells me he's never been to Russia.
No tengo ninguna relación de ninguna naturaleza con ningún ruso.
He has no relationship with anyone from Russia. NCC has never received a single cent from anyone in Russia. No one has provided any evidence to the contrary. Velazquez says the reason they wanted him out has nothing to do with Russia or Marxism. It has to do with who has power in Guatemala and how to keep it.
Es como una narrativa sacada de un libro de la Guerra Fría.
I tell Velazquez it all seems like a Cold War novel.
Sí, de la Guerra Fría.
Yes, he says.
Pero escrito por García Márquez.
But one written by Gabriel García Márquez. Velazquez was experiencing the solitude of his office. He was losing his political allies in the White House, while Jimmy Morales was becoming closer to President Trump. They even attended the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington together.
President Jimmy Morales tells President Trump, I understand what you're going through.
Yo lo comprendo.
You are being persecuted by Robert Mueller in the States. I am being persecuted by Iván Velázquez in Guatemala. I know how much you've suffered through all this.
Velázquez was in trouble. His old ally, Joe Biden, was gone. And when Nikki Haley, Trump's ambassador to the United Nations, paid Guatemala a visit, she told Velazquez to tone it down, stop bragging that you're more popular than the government, and get rid of those I love CC bumper stickers.
When Ambassador Nikki Haley visits Guatemala, it is an explicit show of support for Morales. She has a series of complaints for me. Stop doing press conferences, anonymity. That is what is expected of my role at CSIC.
Within days of returning to Washington, Nikki Haley was talking about Guatemala again.
Thank you so much. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Haley's speaking at the AIPAC convention, the largest pro-Israel lobby. Trump had recently announced that the U.S. was moving its embassy to Jerusalem, a city both Palestinians and Israelis claim as their capital.
God bless Guatemala. They even joined us in moving their embassy to Jerusalem.
You know who else spoke there? Jimmy Morales. He got a standing ovation.
Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. Hoy es un buen día.
We start to see a budding bromance between Trump and Morales. Velazquez believes the lobbyists help bring them together by telling Morales, move the embassy and Trump will help you out. And what did Morales want in exchange?
What Morales really wanted
que no continuara la CICIG.
Was to end CICIG. And if that was not possible, he wanted to make sure that at least I was no longer running it.
So what's going on here? We started with David Landau. He and his lobbyist group wanted CICIG out. He had a theory that Velazquez was working with Vladimir Putin. A Wall Street Journal columnist and members of Congress piled on. Velazquez is on the outs with the U.S. while Morales is getting cozier with Trump. About 6 months after Morales pledged to move the embassy to Jerusalem, Velazquez turns on the TV.
Buenas tardes. Pueblo de Guatemala.
And there's the president. Surrounding him are 50 military officers backing him up as he announces.
Que la CICIG no va a continuar.
CICIG will not continue. Jeeps with mounted artillery are summoned to the capital. They park in front of the CICIG. The machine guns manned and pointed.
Esto está militarizado.
A threat with the military.
The U.S. military had provided the Jeeps to fight drug trafficking. It's a tense situation. Velazquez picks up the phone.
Yo?
I then
hablo con el embajador de Estados Unidos.
Talk to the U.S. ambassador.
But the United States won't help. And all of this shook Guatemalan society to the bone. It was a dark reminder of the civil war and military rule.
Guatemala es un país que sufrió por décadas la dictadura militar y una represión inmisericorde.
Guatemala is a country that for decades suffered merciless repression by military dictatorship. An entire generation of intellectuals killed. There was a genocide.
Un genocidio. Mataron miles de indígenas desaparecidos, torturados, con toda la acción de los gobiernos militares.
Thousands of indigenous people murdered, disappeared, tortured, all commanded by a government ruled by the military. So, a military presence literally behind the president, It was a reminder, especially for those over 40 years old. This is how things used to be.
Velasquez tries to stick it out. But when he leaves the country for UN meetings in New York a few days later, Morales issues another public statement.
Then they declare that I will not be allowed back into Guatemala.
Que no me van a dejar entrar.
I will not be let in.
In spite of this, he boards his plane to Guatemala City and he's deported.
My personal belongings stayed in Guatemala, but were later shipped to me.
To Bogota, Colombia, his home country, where we met earlier this year. Velasquez says Morales also did something else for President Trump. In July 2019, Trump announces the so-called Safe Third Country Agreement with Morales.
We've signed agreements with Guatemala that have been tremendous in terms of really both countries, but our country with respect to illegals coming into our country.
Under this deal, migrants from other Central American countries like Honduras and El Salvador could not apply for asylum in the U.S. Instead, they had to ask for asylum in Guatemala.
Guatemala has been terrific.
Weeks after Joe Biden was inaugurated as president this year, his administration rescinded this policy. But it was a staple of Trump's immigration plans. And 1 month before this deal was announced, the Trump administration took care of one of Morales' biggest headaches. It cut U.S. funding to CSIC. I ask Velasquez, was it a quid pro quo?
Yes, yes. It's a transaction where both parties seek to win something.
Usted, apóyenos a nosotros de esta persecución que desata la CSIC contra nosotros.
You help us by ending this persecution alleged by the CSIC, and we will help you. And how do you shut down CSIC? By cutting the funds.
Y eso fue finalmente lo que lograron.
And that is exactly what happened.
Velasquez doesn't have documentation to back up his claim. We did talk to a senior State Department official who told us he doesn't have evidence of a direct quid pro quo either. But he said CSIC was a bargaining chip and both sides got what they wanted. Morales wanted CSIC gone and the Trump administration wanted Central Americans to stay in Central America. The Trump administration wouldn't respond to our questions. But Trump has said he cut funding to CSIC because it hadn't done anything for the U.S. We also tried to reach Jimmy Morales. I got cell phone numbers for his son and his brother. You know, the breakfast people. And this summer, I gave them a call.
Hello?
¿Aló, podría hablar con el señor Samuel Morales?
Claro que sí, a las órdenes. ¿Quién habla?
Me llamo Morales' brother Sammy picked up. We talked for 20 minutes, but he didn't agree to be interviewed on air. He told me that CSIC was corrupt and that Velasquez was only interested in publicity. He sent a SWAT team to my home. He made a scandal over $11,000, Sammy told me. After Velasquez was kicked out of Guatemala, Sammy was acquitted. Velasquez tried to run CSIC from Colombia, but the end of U.S. money made that impossible.
Even though Trump and Morales declared Guatemala safe back in 2019, people continued to risk everything to flee. When we come back, we head to the hills of Guatemala to investigate why. This is Reveal.
Reveal is brought to you by Progressive Insurance with the Name Your Price tool, offering a range of coverage and price options to choose from. Now that's Progressive. More at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE.
Do you want to know more about how we do what we do? Well, our weekly newsletter takes you behind the scenes. Our investigations change laws, minds, and sure, we like to say it, the world. Be among the first to read them. Just text newsletter to 474747. You can text STOP at any time. Standard data rates apply. Again, text newsletter to 474747. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Before the break, we heard how now former Guatemalan president Jimmy Morales ended a UN-backed anti-corruption commission. It had been set up to make life more equitable for people in Guatemala so they would have opportunities in their own country. Journalist Maria Martin now takes us back to a mountain village there, a place where these international deals are having real-world consequences on families like Soyla Camos, who we met earlier.
I've made so many trips to Soyla's small village. It's in a mountainous province near Guatemala's border with Mexico that sends more people to the United States than anywhere else in Central America. During the Civil War in the 1980s, Todos Santos was a center of bloodshed. For generations, these indigenous communities have been marginalized. Systemic discrimination has denied them access to education and health care, while investment has passed them by. And even today, there's little evidence of Guatemalan government support here or of that U.S. aid money that Joe Biden was talking about. The main economy here isn't factories or coffee. It's money sent home from abroad, from family members who have gone north. Everywhere you look, there are spacious, multi-story, American-style suburban homes. But for those who don't have relatives abroad, there's little for them here. I drive past Todos Santos and towards Soyla's village. We climb up higher into the mountains on a narrow, winding road. In some parts of this region, people raise sheep, but here it's quiet. The houses get smaller, and the roads turn to dirt. When we heard from Soyla earlier, she was telling us the story of how her husband Gilberto and their son Franklin had been separated by the U.S. Border Patrol. Gilberto tells me what happened next. After they were separated, Gilberto was taken to a jail in Florence, Arizona. He didn't know what happened to Franklin.
¿Y dónde está Franklin, mi hijo? ¿Dónde está? No sé dónde está Franklin. ¿Dónde está a Franklin?
This was Gilberto's second trip to the U.S. He'd also come north in the early 2000s. He worked in construction, building suburban tract homes outside San Diego. But he was deported after a traffic stop. This time, sitting in the detention center in Arizona, he's given a choice, incarceration or deportation. Gilberto says that in his cold cell, he couldn't take the sadness. He thought he was going to die, and he had no idea where Franklin was. So Gilberto made a difficult decision. He signed his deportation papers, leaving Franklin in the United States.
Tonight,
what are you doing?
Outrage across the country.
Do you agree that we need to take care of those children?
This was at the height of President Trump's family separation policy. His administration was separating thousands of children from their parents at the border and incarcerating them in gyms, warehouses, and even cages. As for Soyla, she tells me through a mom to Spanish translator about those dark days in 2018 when she didn't know what had happened to her husband or to her son.
Dice la señora que cuando el niño fue separado con ese trauma, ella de una vez se enfermó por la tristeza por Franklin, se quedó con el dolor de los pies. Dice que no puede caminar y no tiene.
Soyla said it was so hard when Franklin was gone that she started to get physically ill. I thought he was dead, and I was sick from the sadness. My whole body ached, she tells me. Soyla fell apart, outraged that her husband had gone to the U.S. and returned without her son. She thought she would never see Franklin again. Soyla fell into a deep depression. Most days, she didn't even get out of bed. She knew she needed help, but couldn't afford to go to the doctor. And as for Gilberto, he had traveled 2,000 miles twice. He wanted to be able to send money home so that one day he could build one of those glorious suburban-style homes for his wife and children. But he'd been deported twice, and now his family was accusing him of abandoning Franklin. Finally, Gilberto finds a lawyer in town, and with his help, they're able to track Franklin down.
¿Dónde está a Franklin? Franklin está en Nueva York.
Where is Franklin? He was in New York, imprisoned in a federal detention center for children separated from their parents. When they finally reach him on the phone, it's heart-wrenching.
Cuando hablo con él, Franklin, pues él estaba llorando. ¿Y por qué me dejaste? Pues él, ¿dónde está mi papá?
Why did you leave me here? Franklin asked. I didn't know where you were. When am I going to go back?
Me siento triste. ¿Cuándo voy a regresar?
Gilberto didn't know what to answer. From his small village, even making a phone call was difficult. But finally, with a lawyer's help, 6 months after they were separated, Gilberto gets some good news. He's told to go to Guatemala City, that Franklin will be waiting for him there. Franklin was reunited with his parents on October 28, 2018. Around the same time, the head of CICIG, Ivan Velasquez, was kicked out of the country. Franklin was still struggling to readjust to life in the village. I visited them the following September, while CICIG was closing its doors for good. Franklin and I sit together, opening bottles of Coke right at the bottom of the hill not far from their house. His mother, Zoila, brings out a meal of boiled eggs and black beans. I try to make conversation with Franklin about what the shelter was like in the U.S., but he's withdrawn. The first time I saw him, he shrank against the wall. His father, Gilberto, says that Franklin came back a different little boy. He used to be talkative. And even now, a year after he came back home, when I ask him about his time in detention, it's hard for him to say more than a simple yes or no. The only time he lights up is to say he liked the food he got there.
¿Qué comías ahí?
Cornflakes, Doritos.
I liked the cornflakes and donuts at the shelter, he says. The family is happy to be back together. But at the same time, Zoila and Gilberto don't have enough money to feed their three children one meal a day, every day. So for all the heartache, Gilberto says he didn't see any other choice when he took Franklin to the U.S.
¿Por qué me fui? Por pobreza y para mantener la familia.
Why did I go, he says? Por pobreza. Because of poverty. He was making a decision to support his family. And in these western highlands of Guatemala, Gilberto's story is one shared by many.
Yo trabajo de agricultor todos los días. Cuando no hay, voy a traer leña.
The only job Gilberto can find is picking potatoes or gathering wood. Gilberto makes $6 a day, but often can only find work 2 or 3 days a week.
Tengo un trabajo así seguido, nada, ¿no?
Gilberto says even though the family is back together, they are poorer than before.
Me costó casi 30 mil quetzales.
To get to the States, Gilberto borrowed close to $6,000 from a bank to hire a coyote to get them across the border. He still owes the bank that money.
Yo debo el dinero ahorita. Ese es el problema. No hay nada, no tengo nada. No tengo. Entonces, no es tan fácil. Todavía está con la deuda.
He wants to pay off the debt, but he only makes $6 a day. So he can't even pay the interest on his loans.
When we first aired this story, coronavirus was at its peak and the U.S. border to Mexico closed.
Hello?
But I checked in with Zoila, Gilberto, and Franklin.
Hello?
Hello, ¿con quién hablo?
Yo soy Franklin.
Franklin, ¿cómo estás?
Bien.
Franklin told me that with the lockdown, they weren't allowed to leave their village. And because of the coronavirus, there was even less work than before.
No hay dinero.
There's no money, he tells me. There's no food and there's no firewood.
Que Dios los cuide, okay?
Okay. Gracias, José María.
Adios. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.
Franklin's father, Gilberto, still fantasized about going back north, but there was no way that he could secure another loan for a third trip to the U.S.
Cuando Franklin quiere regresar otra vez, pues, cuando ya tenía sus 18 años.
He's waiting for Franklin, who's now 10, to reach his 18th birthday.
Pues, ¿cuándo va a ser el más grande? Pues, es lo que yo quiero, sí.
Then his son Franklin can try his luck going north alone.
The Biden administration is promising to tackle corruption in Guatemala. There's also talk of a large aid package coming to the region. But Guatemalan-born Congresswoman Norma Torres says the U.S. shouldn't send new aid until the corruption in the government is dealt with. Otherwise, she says, the U.S. would just be lining the pockets of politicians instead of getting the money to the people who need it. One final note. After our story first aired back in September, some of our listeners got in touch. They wanted to support Franklin and his family. One listener sent the family $5,000, enough for them to pay back their entire debt. Thanks to reporter Maria Martin, author of Crossing Borders, Building Bridges, A Journalist's Heart in Latin America. Our lead producer this week is Anayansi Diaz-Cortez. Aaron Glantz edited the show with help from executive producer Kevin Sullivan. Thanks to Professor Joe Marie Burt of George Mason University, Felix Perez Mendoza, Luis Solano, Maria Martin Mendoza, Jimena Villagran, Henry Bean, Monica Campbell, Kate Doyle, Jose Carlos Zamora, and Reveal's Laura Morell. And Willie Vergara provided voiceover for us. Thanks to the Fund for Investigative Journalism for supporting Maria Martin's reporting in Guatemala. And a special shout out to my friend Prisca Neely for her help on the show. Our production manager is Amy Mustafa. Original score and sound design by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help this week from Brett Simpson. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Sumi Agarwal is our acting editor-in-chief. And our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the In As Much Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.